Our readings today are from Romans chapter 4, verses 13 to 25, which is a John Henson translation, and then later from Mark chapter 8, verses 31 to 38, a translation by Tom Wright. God promised Abraham and his descendants that one day the world would be theirs. This promise was not based on what it says in the rule book, but on a relationship of trust with God. If only those who keep the rules are to enjoy God's new world, then trust counts for nothing and the promise was false. The rule book only leads to frustration. When there are no rules, there's no upset when they are broken. So the promise depends on trust and on God's delight in giving. It's for all the descendants of Abraham, not only for those who keep the rules, but also for those who trust God like he did. Abraham may be regarded as the ancestor of all of us. The old books put it clearly. I've made you the ancestor of many nations. Abraham stands in the presence of the one he trusted, the one who brings the dead back to life, the same God who makes worlds out of nothing. Abraham clung on to the hope that he would be the ancestor of many nations, even when it seemed impossible. When he heard the words, "Your descendants will be too many to count," he was very old with not much longer to live. What's more, Sarah was incapable of having children. But none of this put him off. He went on trusting in God's promise, and this trust renewed his physical strength and his delight in God. He never doubted for a moment that God would be able to keep the promise. It was this trust that kept him on good terms with God. The words, "on good terms with God," don't only apply to Abraham. They apply to us, too, since we trust the same God who brought Jesus, our leader, back to life. He was arrested and executed as a result of our wrongdoing and was brought back to life to restore our relationship with God.
Jesus now began to teach them something new. There's big trouble in store for the Son of Man, he said. The elders, the chief priests, and the scribes are going to reject him. He will be killed, and after 3 days he'll be raised. He said all this quite explicitly. At this, Peter took him aside and started to scold him. But he turned round, saw the disciples, and scolded Peter. "Get behind me, accuser," he said. "You're thinking human thoughts, not God's thoughts." He called the crowd to him with his disciples. "If any of you want to come the way I'm going," he said, "you must say no to your own selves and pick up your cross and follow me. Yes, if you want to save your life, you'll lose it. But if you lose your life because of me and the message, you'll save it. After all, what use is it to win the world and lose your life? What can you give in exchange for your life? If you're ashamed of me and my words in this cheating and sinning generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of you when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels.
Thank you, Tiffany and Jordan. John Henson, the translator of the first reading from Romans, is a Baptist minister, and Tom Wright was the Bishop of Durham. So quite different traditions, but bring us, I think, those readings in a fresh way. At Gateways recently, we were engaged with the video presentation of Alan, that gentleman, who's a scholar, and we were really engaged, and in the beginning of Mark, and realised that this was meant to be heard, not read. And so I wanted to use a different translation so you couldn't really follow it in your pew Bible today, but also I think they're very refreshing. Now let us sing number 648 in Together in Song, Help Us Accept Each Other as Christ Accepted Us. Last Saturday morning I went down to Bunnings. I needed something, and they're not very far away, and I just grabbed this cap to protect myself from the rays that would damage my head. And as I came out of Bunnings with my purchase, a young man stopped me. And I realised that he was probably Vietnamese, because he pointed to my cap and said, "Where did you get your cap? Did you buy it in Vietnam?" And I said, "Yes, I did. We were on holiday." He said, "You know, it's communist." I said, "Yes, I do. Does it offend you?" "No, no, but it's communist." I said, "Is it offensive to you?" And I was ready to remove the cap. He said, "No, no, I just want you to know it's communist. And my father fought against the communists." How was I identified to that young man? How are we identified to the world? The theme is about a new identity on this the second Sunday of Advent, a new identity. And we've had the story from Romans that referred to the story from the Hebrew scriptures of Abram and Sarai, who had new names given to them. Both of them, not just Abraham, but both of them were given names and brought in the way of God's kingdom and what God wants for the world. They were to be agents of change. They left their homeland. They became refugees or migrants, not really sure where they were going. And then the story from Romans, where Paul identifies that we now are all in that great stream of people who've taken on following God and God's ways and are given a new name, Christian. And then this wonderful story of Jesus in the gospel. I know a number of you, many of you, in fact, love detective stories or mystery stories. Last night we had a wonderful time with guests for a combined birthday celebration, and we had to record spooks so we can watch it later. I mean, when we saw spooks in the earlier series, we were on the edge of our seats. We didn't know what was going to happen. In Agatha Christie, which we used to read, and now we can see, and I still don't know who did it. So, Midsummer Murders, you just about got over one, and the second and the third murder happens, and you still haven't got a clue, because right till the end, it seems to be revealed. And of course, Hercule Poirot. He gets them all together and then reveals. Well, I think we've got to do a little detective work on the gospel and on the scriptures today. We really have to, it all seems pretty straightforward. Jesus now began to teach them something new. There's big trouble in store for the Son of Man, he said. The elders, the chief priests and the scribes are going to reject him. He will be killed. And at this, Peter took him aside and started to scold him. But he turned, saw the disciples and scolded Peter. Get behind me, accuser. He said, you're thinking human thoughts, not God thoughts. That's pretty straightforward. Jesus says, the Son of Man is going to suffer and die. And Peter says, no. He says, well, hang on, get behind me. Accuser. I know, in the old translation, it's get behind me, Satan. So here, Tom Wright. Tom Wright is identifying the accuser as not the way of God. So let's run with that for a moment. I reckon with our detective work on this passage, this is a clue. The way of the world. Now, the disciples are there, and Peter's the one that speaks up. But I'm wondering if there are one or two others who think, oh, yeah, I reckon Peter's got on the job here. No, Jesus, no, this is not the way you should go. We've been with you 3 years, and the miracles are pretty cool. The fish and the 5,000, that was great. But they're not important things. The important thing is you. We decided to follow you. Now, we haven't always got it. It's sometimes been a bit dim. But we are following you and your way. And this is not the way. If this happens, we're doomed. It's all been to no avail. We're lost. You can't go and get yourself killed. Jesus, there'll be other Passovers. You don't have to go to this one. Well, maybe that was their thinking. But Jesus says, get behind me, accuser. Now wait, let's look at this passage again. I've got some new teaching. The Son of Man. Son of Man. Son of Man. Daniel in the Hebrew scriptures. That's it. That's where that term was first used. Daniel. And it referred to a persecuted and a downtrodden Israel. So, Son of Man, downtrodden, persecuted, marginalized. That's the way Jesus is going. And Peter's thinking, anointed one, king, triumphant, overcoming, beating the enemies. That's the one. We followed you. We thought you were going to do that. I'm teaching you something new. The Son of Man is going that way. Get behind me, accuser. That's not the way at all. The way is of suffering service. I reckon Abram and Sarai, who in this great covenant between God and these frail, fallible human beings, is that you are loved and I'm giving you a new name. Abraham and Sarah, sure. But I think the new name actually is good news. Good news for a world. And we are in that great tradition of the Abrahamic faith, along with our friend Muhammad, who's still in Bangladesh. We share that common faith. And then Paul said, you're also in that great tradition and your name is good news. All have faith and follow. You're also descendants of Abraham, he said. And of course, the greatest exponent of good news was Jesus, who now says, this is the way. If you follow me, you have to say no to yourself. Take up your cross. And it doesn't mean you have to suffer your bunions or your lumbago. That's not taking up your cross. What it means is service to those perhaps we don't want to serve. Looking after those that are not so lovely. This is the model that we have in Jesus. So as we examine this text as detectives, the clue, I think, and you may disagree with me, we've got morning tea if you want it, that's fine. The clue is the Son of Man, not the king riding in on the white horse with the armies and the howitzers and the rockets and the, but the one who rides on the donkey and the one who goes forth to be killed. This is part of our Lenten journey. One last thing. What name do you get? I know. It's good news. Your name is good news.